Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's built around your body. The Natural Cycles app pinpoints your fertile days by tracking shifts in your temperature, so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. It's easy to use. Simply take your temperature in the morning with our free Bluetooth thermometer included with our annual plan, or sync with your Oura Ring or Apple Watch. The app analyzes your data and tells you daily whether it's a fertile or non-fertile day. Natural Cycles is 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. But beyond effective birth control, the app helps you understand your body and cycle better than ever. And unlike some period tracking apps, Natural Cycles provides an advanced data protection program to keep your information private and secure. Ready to go hormone-free? Sign up for the Natural Cycles annual plan and get a free Bluetooth thermometer, plus 15% off your subscription with the code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com.
All right, we'll lay it out here in a second. Where is the AFC South in the tapestry of the NFL? Where are the Texans in the athletics power rankings? We'll get to that shortly as the sun's coming up here live at the Methodist Training Center. Houston Texans training camp 2025 underway in a couple of hours. They'll start practicing. Nick Caserio meets with the media here at 8:30 today. D'Amico Ryan's meeting with the media after practice today. So it starts. Today it begins. And as I mentioned, press conferences, B. Scott, this happened yesterday at Tennessee. Mike Vrabel, of course, is the head coach there. We're familiar with Vrabel here. His time as an assistant coach, coaching the linebackers. One of the big personalities out here, yelling at his crew and whatnot, and obviously did some nice things in Tennessee. And now, I say it was in Tennessee. He's in New England now. What am I saying?
Right.
This did not take place in Tennessee. This took place up in New England
yesterday. We're so used to him being in Tennessee, but he is now back at home, I guess you could say.
He is, and the Patriots are getting a lot of love, man. 8.5, the number of wins for the Patriots in Vegas. One less than the Texans.
Yeah, I feel like
something's amiss here.
I feel like Vrabel has a lot to do with that. Like, he's got a lot of respect around the league. Of course, Drake May showed some promise. You know, quarterback and head coach is usually the indicator. Like, if you got a good head coach, you got a good quarterback, it's a team to believe in. I feel like most people think that Drake May is trending in the right direction, and obviously respect Mike Vrabel as a head coach.
And the Dolphins are backsliding. The Jets are a disaster. So they've got four games right there. They're going to play a fourth-place schedule, I think, right? They picked third in the draft last year, so they're going to play a – you know, their three variable games are all going to be against teams that were in last place last year. So maybe, you know, 8.5's a little rich. I wouldn't touch that. Now, if the amount of salt and energy that the Patriots bring to the regular season is equivalent to Vrabel yesterday at his press conference, then I'll take the over on 8.5, because here was Vrabel getting asked a question by a media member that apparently had just been asked and answered in long form moments before.
How do you feel about having Vasquez back?
I mean, whether you were in a coma when I answered Tom's question or typing on your phone or tweeting, I don't know, but I spent 5 minutes answering that question. And I could go back through it, but I'd rather not.
Okay, so that's Vrabel. I mean, like, classic. Like, that's, I feel like I'm living back in the Bill O'Brien era again. That's definitely something O'Brien would have done.
That's so funny.
So here's my question. You are a press conference enthusiast.
Yes.
You're a frequent attender of press conferences across all sports here in this town.
Great.
First, the slippery slope that journalists at press conferences live in nowadays, when there's this race to tweet out transcribed quotes to their social media audience. I feel like the media members are already in harm's way.
Yes.
But within our contingency of the media here in Houston, do you have any sort of power ranking on most likely to get caught in a Vrabel and that dude type of situation?
Yeah, so before I answer with my power ranking, I do want to say this is one of the things that for me...
I love that you have a power ranking.
Well, I guard against this. Like, I have a rule of thumb to avoid being in this exact reporter situation where you're dealing with... Now, every coach isn't going to handle it like Mike Vrabel. I thought that was comical. And I imagine that there's probably some relationships built where that was probably lighthearted, as harsh as it did kind of sound. But you don't want to be in this position as a reporter. And so one of the things that I'll do is if I show up late, if I miss anything.
No questions.
Yeah,
because that's a good rule to have.
Because there's the slight possibility that whatever question that I was going to ask has already been asked and answered, and therefore you get this type of response from the coach.
Yeah.
But I do have a ranking for you. and I did this because For me, I thought about guys that would be a really good sport about this if it got out to them, if they heard about it.
Yeah.
And these are also go-getters. This is really a credit to the fact that they're stretched thin and that they're hustling.
Yeah.
And they're trying to be in multiple places at once, all while being one person. And so you can kind of understand how they can fall under this trap.
Yeah, none of these guys are playing Candy Crush on their phones when they're at these press conferences.
No, they're working.
They're doing work. You know, they're trying to get information out to the audience is what they're doing. Continue.
Let me give
power
you my,
rankings.
I'm going to start with one. I know sometimes we count down. I'm going to just rip off the band-aid and
Yeah. Who's number one?
I'm going to go with my guy, Randy Mack. Randy McAvoy.
Randy McAvoy? Oh! Yeah,
you weren't expecting this, huh?
And no!
I love you, Randy Mack. My Sam Houston State brethren. I was on KPRC on Sunday. Love it every time
you
Randy
texts me. You know
you're
going to see all these guys here in about an hour.
This
all right.
is why I pick some of these guys, because I know the ones that are going to be good sports about it.
Yeah, no, Randy will be a good sport.
Who I actually love and have great personal relationships with. But here's why I say this,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, I need some analysis here.
First of all, it's a question that Randy would ask. Just on the face, forget whether it was asked already or like how did the guys look. You know, the TV guys tend to ask some of these questions that'll get those types of sound bites.
Yeah.
So Randy McAvoy would ask this question, but I could also see him being late because he's trying to do so much.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to take a shot at KPRC, but they've downsized.
Oh, Randy, that's an industry thing.
But specific to our market now, KHOU still has 2 to 3 guys that are covering
they
sports.
Do. Yep.
KPRC only has the one, and that's Randy McAvoy.
Yeah.
And so I could see Randy McAvoy having to do something right before the press conference or
all
getting
right.
there 2 to 3 minutes late and missing the initial question,
okay.
but still wanting to get this question in, making sure that this question was asked. And so my number one is going to be Randy Mack.
Okay. Give me. Do you have any? Give me like a. Do you have a 2 and a 3 on
I
this?
I have a 2 and a 3.
Okay, give me the top three.
Randy Mack number one. Jonathan Alexander number two, because he's the one that's got to ask all the questions as the beat writer.
He's the beat writer for the paper in town,
Houston Chronicle, the newspaper in town.
Yeah,
he's got to be on record with everything. And I've watched Jonathan. Obviously, I work with Jonathan at the Houston Chronicle, but I've also observed him and watched him work. I know that he's trying to interview guys away from the podium, away from the press conference, do one-on-ones, but also come to the press conference and find out what was happening at the press conference. Very easy for him to have missed that question. And my third one.
Yeah.
My guy, DJ Bienemy of ESPN. And DJ, look, some part of me envies him because I feel like he's living his best young single man life.
Hell yeah.
You know, he's a good-looking guy.
Good like, shape.
Good in shape. Yeah. I could see DJ just coming here straight, just laid off of a workout.
Right.
You know, he's a track and field athlete in college.
Yeah.
DJ Bienemy is somebody that I could definitely see being in a position
like this. You're looking at it through the lens of these are guys who might show up late to the press conference and ask a question that's already been asked.
Yeah.
See, I'm thinking about it through the lens of guys that were on their phone and not paying attention because they're disseminating information out there.
Now, that's literally all of them. But if you want to go under that specific umbrella, I got another one for you.
Well, mine would be Aaron Wilson.
Aaron Wilson.
Yeah, okay, so we're on the same page. I don't know how Aaron gets all the quotes out as fast as he does on the phone at these press conferences.
He's a dadgum machine.
He's a machine, yeah.
He's a machine. Like,
and he doesn't have typos. It's really
Well,
AI may do some of this for him. I have no idea.
Well, no, and to his credit, though, he's got a lot of practice at this because it's not like he just waits till the season to start before he does this, right?
Yeah.
He's on all the time, round the clock, tweeting information. Sometimes it's incremental and borderline useless. Most of the time it's extremely useful, and you got to credit the work ethic. But Aaron Wilson is definitely the guy who would have his head in his phone and somehow miss this. The thing he's less likely to do is actually miss it because he's good at multitasking
he's good
and still paying attention while he's doing all the tweeting.
Okay.
But he would be the one with his head buried in his phone 100%.
So I like that your power ranking of the guys who might be late to the press conference.
Yep.
But for good reasons, you said. You know, because they're doing so many things. They're multitasking.
And because I know from experience. I'm not guessing on those.
You don't have a notebook out where you're taking attendance or anything.
No,
it's just a gut feel.
No, we've just been around each other enough to where
we don't want them to think that Beast got some sort of like press conference Karen or something
that. No, but a part of our job is to pick up on tendencies.
Monitor the others.
And to be observant. And I'm not just observing the players and coaches. I'm observing my peers.
Oh, my God. I love you.
And I know
for
what you guys are doing.
That's hilarious. Texans 8th in the athletic power rankings.
That's more like
I like that a little bit better than that roster ranking we did on ESPN where they had them 13th.
Yeah, man.
8th feels feels a little more like what I'm feeling, right? Look, they've been one of the final eight teams standing the last 2 years. Put them eighth.
I wish I had done my podcast with this list in mind as instead of the one that we – so I did my podcast immediately after the show and with the ESPN list in mind, yeah. Right, thinking, you know, talking about the Texans, are they a top 10?
And your podcast is?
The B-Block Podcast.
B-Block
you
podcast.
Can get it wherever you get
download
your podcast.
It.
And
yep.
Also – on YouTube, same place where you can find us on Sports Radio 610.
Yep.
But I do that with in mind the ranking that the ESPN has, and we dove into that and saw how whoever wrote that thing might be a casual, might not actually be following everything.
Yeah, based on who they had in the starting lineup.
Yeah,
Jimmy Ward is a starting safety.
This feels much more, and I'll give the Athletics some credit because it's not like they got a presence here or anything.
Yeah.
It's not like they're still covering the Texans intimately. But they got a much better beat on it. I think that eight is a much more suitable ranking.
Yeah, it's to me, I like eighth as well, more so than 13th. I'd probably split the difference. If they were a 10th on something like this, I wouldn't be angry about it. I'm not angry about 13th. I just disagree with it. I think it boils down pretty simply. As long as the injury toll on this team is a normal injury toll, there's going to be injuries this year. We know that. It's football. But as long as it's normal, it's not like it was certainly 2 years ago where nobody missed more games than the Houston Texans roster, more games, potential games played than the Houston Texans. As long as it's just a normal injury year and that C.J. Stroud's not affected by that, this season will go as the offensive line goes. And by that I mean if this offensive line is average, this team will go to the AFC title game.
Well,
they're average. I'm not saying it go like if – they need to be great in order for this team to be great. They don't. There's enough great parts of this team already to where if the offensive line just protects C.J. Stroud at a normal level and opens up holes in the running game at a normal level, this is going to be a really, really, really good football team.
I mean, let's just make it plain, man. It's the difference between what made them a cute story or a nice little fun team and an actual serious contender. Like, what's the difference between here and there for the Texans and what has it been, and especially last year? It's the offensive line, and so that it stands to reason. Mostly everything is either the same or similarly situated, if you will. So you got to think that they're talented enough to be in a very similar position to what they were in last year. The difference, are they going to be another 10-7, first-round win, but divisional round exit?
Yeah.
The difference in that is going to be the offensive line, so I'm right there. As far as this ranking goes, though, the thing that I like the most is just that they're not behind the Texans, that is, or not behind the dadgum Bengals.
I
didn't have the patience for that, given all that's going on with the Bengals and their contract situations on the defensive side of the ball, both Trey Hendrickson and Shamar Stewart, their rookie, and the fact that they were so heavily dependent on they were offense or bust. Their defense could not stop a nosebleed last year. And I don't have much of a reason to believe that that's going to change much going into this season. They're being ranked off the strength of Joe Burrow, whereas I feel like the Texans, the entire team, the totality of the team is what's being considered. They got the quarterback. They got the head coach. And then they got them dogs on defense that we were talking about in the open set.
Well, in this one, too, like Tampa Bay is 16. That feels a little more – that actually feels like they're underselling Tampa a little
but I
think the Texans are a better team than Tampa. We'll find out. Look, they play a lot of these teams that we're talking about hovering around them. The only three teams on their schedule that are ahead of them in these athletic power rankings are the big three in the AFC. Kansas City, Baltimore, and Buffalo, all among the top five teams in the NFL in this. Believe it or not, if you were to add up all the rankings of all four teams in each division – and this is, keep in mind, the AFC South in these rankings are a division where the other teams besides the Texans at 8 are the Jags at 26, the Colts at 27, and the Titans at 31. If you add all those rankings together, you know, the higher the number, the worse the division is.
Yeah.
Actually not the worst division in football. Even though you got three of the bottom eight teams in the division, the NFC South, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the best team in that division. They're barely in the upper half in the power rankings. And the other three teams, Atlanta is 24, and Carolina and the Saints are both among the bottom four teams in the NFL. They're 28 and 29, so among the bottom five teams in the NFL. You add up all the numbers, if my math is correct, the NFC South is actually – I mean, that's two bad divisions right there, man.
But this checks out to me, though. The NFC South, I don't know about you, but it checks out to me just in terms of logic before you do the hard math, just thinking about the teams and thinking about where they've been over the last couple of years.
And the quarterbacks in the division, too.
And the quarterbacks. I've thought of the NFC South like this for a while, or at least the last couple of years. They're the division where the winner could have a losing record, could easily be 7-9. And thanks to the Texans, I think the Texans are what's saving the AFC South from being exactly that. I think everybody thinks that the Texans are a double-digit win team, even if the rest of the division is bringing the property value down.
Yeah.
But in the NFC South, somebody's got to win that division, but it's almost like somebody's got to win it by default, and whoever does win it could very well do so with a losing record. That's I'm not saying that's going to happen, but that's the feel of the division, that absolutely could happen on a given year.
It happened a few years ago. I think one of Tom Brady's years, they were 8-9 and won the division,
there you go.
If I'm not mistaken. All right, Payne and Pendergast, Brandon Scott in for Seth Payne. I mentioned the offensive line for the Houston Texans. Tim Settle, who we talked about a little bit earlier. We're gonna do our repeat our hype segment from the opener. We rewarded the 6 a.m. listeners by getting super hyped for the season. We're going to do it again at 7:45.
And Tim Settle will make an appearance.
Tim Settle will make an appearance here right now. He was on Texans All Access with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris, and they talked to him. We've heard a lot of people on the offensive side of the ball talking about this offensive line throughout this summer period and mini camp and OTAs, and we've heard some of the skill guys on offense. The defensive, we haven't heard much from the defensive side. Tim Settle's a guy who's going to go against this offensive line every day out of training camp. Here is his assessment of where the Texans are on the offensive line compared to where they were last year.
You know, this is overall, for scheme wise, you know, I feel like, you know, it's more like they look more of a unit, you know, they're more look in sync, you know. I feel like the new offense that we're going to run this year is going to be beneficial for them. You know, I'm excited. Just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. You know, we go against them. We see it. I definitely, it's a big difference of what we did from last year. But you know, I'm looking forward to seeing it against another team. You know, definitely have hope, and I definitely love what I'm seeing, especially from the defensive side of how the offense is operating now.
All right. So that was Tim Settle. That answer fits in the same bucket with all the other answers we heard, and I'm going to break it down real, real simple. From what I'm hearing, my layman's ears, what I hear from everybody who's talked about this offensive line and this offense in general, is it feels like they know what the hell they're doing this year. It felt at times last year, often, frequently, that the offensive line was clueless in what they were doing. They didn't know where to be or where to go or who to block. I saw a graphic last night, B. Scott, on on social media that had it was one of these bar charts where the bigger the bar your team had, the worse you were on the offensive line, and the stat that they had was unblocked pressures.
Ooh.
Just pressures where you're just letting guys take runs at your quarterback. And the Texans didn't have the most, but they were right up there. Them and the Bears were right next to each other with a massive number, like 57 or 60 or some crazy number that C.J. Stroud, you know, like basically like three or four a game that C.J. Stroud had to deal with somebody running at him like they were being blocked by the invisible man.
Yeah, it's man, it's so frustrating. And honestly, man, it's the reason why I fixated on C.J. Stroud's shoulder when that whole thing was a story during OTAs and minicamp.
No.
It's because, like, man, the shoulder aside, it's just the fact that this guy is so valuable and you're treating him like he's not, you know, as if, like, it's just okay to run and hit your quarterback. It really was just me speaking to the importance of protecting this guy, because if you don't, these are the things that can happen. His shoulder can get banged up.
Yeah.
He can get concussed. He can be out for a stretch. And God forbid that you're, you know, operating this, you know, we're here to be excited about the team. God forbid that at some point they're operating without their quarterback, without C.J. Stroud.
Yeah.
But on these comments from Tim Settle, it keeps bringing me back, and I'm right there with you on what you said about it, reminding you of everything that's been said about the offensive line up to this point, about this new make offensive line or new look offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
I think about D'Amico Ryans during whether it was OTAs or minicamp, but we were right here in the bubble, right to our left.
Yeah.
And I remember D'Amico Ryans just telling this story about how whichever offensive lineman had gotten out here first, they waited on the rest of the offensive linemen to join them before they ran out here as a unit, and it just kind of, at least to D'Amico Ryans, spoke to their togetherness.
To their camaraderie. Yeah.
And you're talking about how it seems like, you know, one of the big differences is how they know what they're doing, and that's going to matter a great deal, that you know what you're doing versus not when we get out there on the field. But around that, and kind of just more bird's eye view, For me, it's the togetherness. It's the fact that last year the offensive line felt like a bunch of solo artists.
Yeah.
Like, and not to say all of them were selfish per se, but it's like you had five solo artists as opposed to a group of five,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to a – instead of being a boy band, they're out there – they're Bobby Brown. They're Justin Timberlake. They're Beyonce. Instead of being, you know, New Edition or NSYNC.
Yeah.
Or Destiny's Child,
yeah,
right?
Man.
Like, they're not a group.
No.
They're the solo artists. And so hopefully,
it was a bad music festival.
It was an awful music festival.
Yeah.
The porta potties didn't work. It was hot. I mean, it was just an awful freaking music festival. So hopefully they are singing and playing much better tunes this year.
Speaking of music, just shifting gears, sad news yesterday. The first tweet that I saw that Ozzy Osbourne had passed away was from some news outlet I didn't know, and it was just one sentence. It said, Ozzy Osbourne has died at age 76.
Yeah.
And that was it. And I'm like, okay, I hope this isn't true. I think that anytime I see that on social media, I hope this isn't true. And then you go to your Google machine, and there's already articles up about it and whatnot. Man, Ozzy Osbourne, that was about as big an outpouring yesterday. I mean, radio stations kind of just flipping formats for the day. All kinds of voices and people from the musical world, and Ozzy Osbourne was a crossover hit. Like,
oh.
He was not just in music, but obviously reality TV, a world that I'm very in tune with, WWE.
Yeah.
He's had several appearances going all the way back to WrestleMania 2.
Yeah.
When he accompanied the British Bulldogs to the ring at WrestleMania 2.
Yeah.
In their title win over the Dream Team, Greg the Hammer Valentine and Brutus Beefcake.
Yeah.
For the WWF titles. That was an outpouring yesterday, man, for Ozzy Osbourne. Thoughts and prayers.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
Ozzy Osbourne, I know you said it even transcends music, but as far as music goes, about as influential of a rock and roll figure as you'll find.
Yep.
I mean, as much so as Led Zeppelin or anybody who you want to name. Like, just think about it. Ozzy Osbourne is right there with him. And like you said, all of these other moments, pop culture moments aside from music, I mean, the music thing is, I think, is good enough. It's big enough. And then just to kind of transcend that, man. I think about him peeing in front of the Alamo. That's an infamous story.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the type of life you want to live. Whenever it is that you do go to meet your maker, you want folks to have countless stories and instances of you living your best life. And boy, did Ozzy do
you
that.
You want St. Peter to have to pull out an entire book.
Yes.
To go, all right, here we go. We got to go through your balance sheet now.
Yeah.
Ozzy, 76 years old. The conversion chart is, for a normal human being, he basically lived to be 145, is what I estimate, just based on the amount of damage he did to himself through the years.
Yeah.
Let's pay tribute to Ozzy Osbourne, because he had an iconic singing of the baseball hit, Take Me Out to the Ball Game at Wrigley Field. And I feel like 720 for this show, because it's only a two-hour show, feels like it's about the seventh inning of our show.
Yeah.
So let's do the seventh inning stretch here, and let's have Ozzy Osbourne sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game for all of you.
All right, Chicago. I want to hear a real, real crazy crowd start singing with me. Are you ready? Are you ready? I can't hear you. Are you ready? One, two, three. Let's go out to the ball game. Let's go out to the river. Take me in the river. Let me listen to you. I don't remember what I have to do. And I've gone out of the ball game. You're out at the old ball game.
Dude, I cannot disagree with our YouTube commenter Ray anymore. He says, God, this is so painful to listen to. That was maybe, you know, some people are awkward with cringeworthy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like they don't do awkward well. That was hilarious, especially when
Oh, you know, he was into it,
when
man.
They finally get to the numbers, and he goes, oh, and he can't even get through one, but he goes, oh. He knows what comes after one.
Yeah.
Two.
That, yep.
Two was like the first coherent thing that he said once they started singing.
Well, and his wife was right there with him, and that was at Wrigley Field, and the big tradition at Wrigley Field is after you do that, you scream, let's get some runs. And so she actually jumped in and screamed that at the very end, which is what a good wife should do, man.
So good.
Fill your gaps, you know?
I just love the idea of being some type of musical icon and legend the way that I is, but either not knowing take me out to the ball game, like not knowing the words, or being so inebriated, like I can't even imagine what he could have been on. The drugs that he would have been on, I wouldn't even know who to ask to find.
It's a miracle he made it to the ballpark that day.
Amazing. Oh. And a miracle he made it to 76,
man. Shout that's a hell of a run for Ozzy Osbourne. Like 30 years ago, you'd have taken the under on 75 and a half.
Oh, 100%. And anybody else that you ask, hey, you could live a life like that.
Yeah.
And you'll last till 76.
Give it to me, man.
You'll go out there
Where's
and
the
live
paperwork?
Your best freaking
life. I'll sign right
life.
Now.
Let's
I'll
do
sign,
it.
Sign right now. All right,
Meet Natural Cycles, the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app that's 100% natural, hormone-free, and side effect-free. Here's how it works. The app analyzes daily changes in your body temperature to find your fertile window so you can plan or prevent pregnancy naturally. Natural Cycles is a clinically proven non-hormonal birth control option that's 93% effective with typical use and 98% effective with perfect use. No synthetic hormones, just science. And if you're ready to start family planning, switching from preventing to planning a pregnancy is as easy as tapping a button. Plus, the Natural Cycles app makes tracking fertility easy. You can measure your temperature trends using an Oura Ring, Apple Watch, or our Bluetooth thermometer, which is free when you sign up for an annual subscription. Join over 4 million registered users who are taking control of their fertility naturally. Save 15% when you sign up with code RADIO15 at naturalcycles.com. That's RADIO15 for 15% off today.
Texans training camp. We're live here. Sun coming up, and it's people starting to kind of roll in here. Just saw Mark Vandermeer kind of roaming around a little bit. He and John Harris will take over at 8 o'clock today and for the next handful of days here on Sports Radio 610. I'm anxious to see what kind of camp this is. I was thinking about this yesterday, B. Scott. We through the various personalities, through the various successes and failures, through pandemics, through travel, all these things, we've had some very unique training camps, both here in Houston and outside of Houston over the last few years. I've been fortunate enough to cover this team since 2007. I've been even more fortunate to be with the flagship since the 2014 training camp, which was Bill O'Brien's first training camp as the head coach of the Houston Texans. So this will be, at Sports Radio 610, this will be my 12th training camp. I was just jotting, like, back of the cocktail napkin yesterday, like, what have been the best or most memorable ones, good or bad? Because some have been memorable for bad reasons, but memorable. And I've got my list right here. All right. And some of these I know you've been at, too.
Yeah.
The two that are tied for fifth I know you didn't go to. Those were the ones at the Greenbrier in 2017 and 2018. I don't want to spend too much time on those because that's not very inclusive. Most of our audience didn't go to that. I only bring it up to say this. One, it was awesome. If you can go, because they're going to go for a week.
Yeah.
This training camp, you know, two weeks from today, I'll be in West Virginia covering training camp for that whole week of August the 4th. If you can go, it's awesome because hardly any fans go, but they do have bleachers there for the fans. You're at the Greenbrier. You don't have to stay at the Greenbrier. There's plenty of Airbnbs, beautiful part of the country. That was fun just because it was a nice bonding camaraderie experience. We all went, Ted Johnson and I'll never forget, driving from Charlotte up to the middle of nowhere in West Virginia. We were stopping at every barbecue shack in the middle of the mountains. It was great. We had a blast. So it was really fun. There were bears in our backyard at our Airbnb, like very rural.
Yeah.
So that was number five. Number four, and I know you were here for this one, Camp Cully. So I call that one the West Virginia. I have names for all these. That was Camp Countryside.
Okay.
You know, it's like Camp Krusty on The Simpsons.
Yeah,
everything's
got
alliteration.
Yeah, I'm with you.
That was Camp Countryside in West Virginia. Camp Cully in 2021.
Yeah, which at the time we called Camp Casario.
We did. That's right. Like, and that works too.
Yeah, and because it was both of their first training camp with the Texans.
And we knew who would be here longer.
Right. We knew whose show it was. Exactly. But both worked for the alliteration.
Yeah.
So either we could have gone with, and I think we probably went with the right one. But that was a moment. David Culley being the coach of the Texans was for sure a moment in time for this team, man.
Camp Culley included a Deshaun Watson playing walk-through safety in drills. Deshaun Watson, who had led the league in passing yards the year before.
And was healthy.
And was healthy and was getting sued by 24 women, was walk-through safety until finally he just walked over to the media and said, why are y'all filming me?
Yeah.
Same bleep every day, and then they just told him to stay in the building. That was also the first camp since the inaugural season with no Andre Johnson and no J.J. Watt. One or the other was at every Texans training camp other than the first season included Andre Johnson and J.J. Watt. That was – you know, we went 20 years with one of those two icons at training camp. That was the first one with neither of them since the opener back in 2002. Just an interesting sidebar. That I think there were so many things weird about that camp.
Right.
But that contributed to it. They're like, wow, these faces are not familiar at all.
And I think because of the weirdness of it all, what we were going through in the moment, I didn't like that. That's a part of it that I hadn't even taken a moment to reflect on. But you're absolutely right. If I had a list, this would be the one at the top of the list for me.
Most memorable.
Yeah, 2020. Well, just because of how weird it was. Maybe the year before 2020. That's on my list.
I'll get to that.
Yeah, because, I mean, we couldn't sit this close to each other as we are right now.
Yeah.
And so that was weird for non-football reasons, but specific to the field, that would be the one. Deshaun Watson out here running scout team after leading the league in passing.
So number five, Camp Countryside. Number four, Camp Culley. Number three, Camp Cap.
Okay.
D'Amico Ryan's first training camp in 2023, and that's for good reasons, obviously. You're coming off of two years where you couldn't pay people to come to training camp.
Yeah.
And now you got the tickets are in demand again. People are fired up. You got a rookie quarterback. The question of will he be the starting quarterback was something that got everybody, you know, like, why aren't they just naming him the starting quarterback? So you had that storyline.
Not will he, but when he. Why are they taking so damn long to get him there?
The little sliver of that camp that now, with the benefit of memory and hindsight, makes me a little sad is that the big revelation from that camp early on was, holy crap, this Tank Dell.
Yeah.
This Tank Dell. It makes me sad now because of the knee injury to Tank. Hopefully he's back someday. But that was – I remember that. I remember Seth and I, they practiced with the Dolphins that year, a joint practice. And that was at a point in camp where we weren't doing radio out here. We were back to doing four-hour shows. So Seth and I were up in the studio, and we had to race down here to get to practice.
Right.
And we got down here, and they had started the 11-on-11. And within the first, like, 10 snaps after we got here, Tank had, like, two or three touchdowns. That was a fun camp. D'Amico Ryan's first camp, like to feel like the fun again, was really cool.
Yeah, D'Amico Ryan's first camp and C.J. Stroud's first camp aligned. But also, you mentioned Tank Dell was wearing number 13 at the time. Remember, we thought we were going to have the 713 connection.
Yeah,
because, you know, obviously C.J. Stroud wearing number 7. Tank Dell at the time wearing number 13.
Yep.
And it had like a real cool new vibe to it. Like, hey, you know what? We're out of the mud. We're out of these last two seasons, like you mentioned, Sean, that were hell to go through. And the future looks bright.
Yeah. In that camp, there were still people around the league were still ranking the Texans in the bottom five teams in the league.
Well, they didn't know.
They didn't know.
They didn't know what they didn't know. And it also, like, they had a good season, obviously, but I don't even think it was until midway through the season. We were here for it right here at NRG. When they have that final minute run, Tank Dell catches that ball against Tampa Bay.
There's three games in a row. Week 9, Tampa Bay. Week 10, Cincinnati. Week 11, Arizona.
Yeah.
Those three games in a row.
It basically,
they were 6-4 after
that. It basically established the Texans' reputation as we know it today. Now they're trying to move beyond that.
Yeah.
Like move beyond that team that we know is a nice story.
Yep.
We know they can win 10 games. Can they do more than that?
The last two, Camp COVID, you mentioned it, 2020. And this is as exclusive in terms of people being able to watch it as the ones in West Virginia, because nobody was allowed to see it. They only let like 10 or 12 media members in. I was one of them, so I got to go to practice. Were you one of them too? Did you go?
Yeah, at Camp COVID.
Camp COVID.
Yeah,
you were there.
I was out there.
Okay, you were there.
Yeah,
I remember. You know, there's like So you remember that?
Yeah.
We had to go get tested every day in the trailer. We're standing in line with players to get tested. I mean, now they got to cut in front of us.
Right.
But
we would see them getting out of their cars,
and
that's where the testing station was. It's where they parked.
That was wild. That was also the first camp without DeAndre Hopkins.
Oh, yeah.
And I think if it were a normal camp, people would have been more agitated about it. But we were all just so happy to have football.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a chance there wasn't going to be a season at one point. And I think we were all just so happy to have football that, at least the way I'm remembering it, I'm not here to say people weren't angry, especially once the season just completely unraveled.
Right.
And you're watching Hopkins be a Pro Bowler in Arizona, that people weren't angry during the season. But I remember during camp just being happy to be out here and like, okay, good, we've got football.
Yeah, I remember being happy to be out here, but also like, and I'll just speak for myself, but I imagine a lot of us felt this way, just confused about the world.
Yeah.
Like, what exactly is going on? Where is this thing headed? Like, what even is this?
Well, and even once you got to the season, we were doing pregame, you know, they didn't let fans in, but we were doing pregame and postgame for the first home game here against Baltimore.
Yeah.
And then by the next home game, we're doing everything up at the studio. So
yeah.
We were still trying to get our arms around, like, what's safe, what's not, what's too safe, you know, like, how cautious do we need to be, all of that. That was, yeah. And again, I'm not talking in terms of this was a great training camp. We're just talking in terms of it being memorable.
Oh, yeah.
Like, someday if I sit down to write the history of my radio career, covering a COVID training camp in the NFL will be one of the chapters in that book. It was, you know, there were only a few people out here, but it was an entirely unique experience. We had a little GPS things on, we would get warnings from the Texans if we stood next to each other for too long out of practice.
Yeah, you guys are too close.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's not like we're brushing shoulders.
Yeah.
We're too close as in the sense of like 10 feet or whatever it is.
Right.
COVID truly is one of those where, like, if you weren't there, to explain it to you would be really difficult. You would have just had to have been there.
Last one, number one most memorable training camp. I'll call it camp cuss word. Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
Where Bill O'Brien, that was the peak of Bill O'Brien's popularity here in Houston.
Yeah.
Was during Hard Knocks 2015.
Oh, yeah.
Where he was dog cussing up a storm. He was like a rock star. I mean, he was only in season two. They went 9-7 the first season with Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback. Like, Bill O'Brien had not fallen out of favor with the fans at that point. Now, him buying into Brian Hoyer as the solution started to chip away. And that led to Brock Osweiler, which wasn't Bill O'Brien's choice, but if Brian Hoyer had just been better, his personal choice for a guy, they wouldn't have had to go get Brock Osweiler in the first place. That was the Hard Knocks camp was fun and overflowing with content because of the TV show. That's my favorite training camp for the Texans.
Yeah, I also remember Bill O'Brien pretending to like Rick Ross. That being a thing.
Kari Lee doing a Bill O'Brien impersonation.
I remember Brian. I feel like you correct me if I'm wrong on this. I feel like that's the same training camp because I want to say I saw it on Hard Knocks where Brian Cushing was bullying Alfred Blue.
Oh yeah, for sure. So
that part of it is one of the more memorable pieces of that training camp for me.
Those are my five.
Those
are my five. Hopefully this one equally memorable for all the good things.
Oh yeah, it will be.
We're on the good side of that. Texans training camp 2025. All right, Payne and Pendergast, B. Scott in for Seth Payne. Seth back tomorrow. All right, we're going to get hyped up. These are the things we're most excited about. Just flat out, no X's and O's next segment. Just things at camp, things this season, that if you're a Texan fan and you're listening, you're going to want to run through this with us. We're about to get hyped up for this training camp, and we're going to pass the baton to Mark Vandermeer and John Harris as well. We'll do all of that coming up next.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
We're not messing around in this last segment.
We've got
7 or 8 minutes here to do our thing, and there's no reason to dive into X's and O's with anything. It is Texans training camp. Sean Pendergast, Brandon Scott with you. We're about to hand it off to John Harris and Mark Vandermeer. This is just flat out, get pumped up. These are the things I'm excited about for both training camp and the upcoming season. And I'm going to give you my first one right now, and it was not in the 6 o'clock hour. This is a new one.
Let's go.
Two things. I'm excited for two things about John Harris, Texan sideline reporter. One already happened. I got my first middle finger of training camp from John Harris. So that's number one. Number two.
Welcome back, Sean.
I am amped for the first time. And play that music, Ben. Let it scream. I am pumped for the first time. John Harris is pumped about a touchdown or a big play in a game.
There's nothing
better than the Harris memes.
Yes.
The Harris memes on the sideline. Two fists, Looking like he won big money on fast money on Family Feud.
Okay, okay.
Bent knee, two fists, completely biased. I love it.
All right. So
if we're doing this dueling piano style, what's yours?
If we're going to go with a media member that's in close proximity to us right now, I'll flip this on you, Sean.
What?
I can't wait for your first game management, clock management crash out. Because that's coming, and I love it. Because you're always right, by the way.
Thank you.
I'm not saying that you're incorrect or that it's not justified.
Yeah.
It's just, it just reminds me and makes me think of football. It makes me know that we're here in the football season.
Yeah.
We care about this thing, possibly irrationally, but that's okay. We're not judging each other. We all care. And Sean is very much in tune to when you should be calling a timeout, when you shouldn't, when you should go for it, and when you shouldn't, and all of these types of things. I cannot wait. And, okay. And we all participate.
Of course.
But Sean is one of the most animated and most passionate about getting the game management situations right. So yeah. I can't wait to be on the eighth floor
I love that.
Of NRG Stadium in the press box, sitting a couple of seats down from Sean Pendergast and seeing that crash out.
I'm not supposed to react to anything because those are the rules, but the rules go out the window when I'm seeing silly things happen on the field. I love that. I love that my overreactions in the press box made the list. That's beautiful.
And it's in the press box, and then it transfers to the post-game show.
It does.
So
that's true.
So I can't wait to flip on the Odyssey app,
man.
And I'm usually still in the press box when you guys start.
I appreciate
so
that.
So I get to see it live and in person with you sitting a couple of seats down from
me.
Then I cut on the app, and I get to hear you
live. You're the man, B-Scott.
Let's
I appreciate
go.
That. Let's at least squeeze some football ones in here.
Let's do it.
Nico Collins doing it. Nico Collins pulling out the entire menu of punishment and harm on the opposition, whether it's mossing them on 50-50 balls, whether it's trucking them on that lethal slant route that he runs with a head of steam, whether it's a bubble screen that he takes to the house because Laramie Tunsil's not around anymore to be illegally downfield, or whether it's him not even having the ball in his hands, it's trucking some dude to open up a lane for Joe Mixon or Nick Chubb on the outside and then getting up and screaming, "Weight room!
Weight room.
Weight room.
That's weight room,
I'm pumped
boy.
Up for that, man. I'm pumped up for Nico Collins, a fully healthy Nico Collins trucking fools this year. Give me all of it, man.
How about his counterpart on the other side, his counterparts on the other side? The Texans' defensive secondary and specifically the chip-on-the-shoulder defensive secondary. These guys are out there with something to prove. Kamari Lassiter feels slighted.
Yeah.
Kalen Bullock feels slighted.
Yeah.
Derek Stingley is like some kind of quiet assassin. Y'all remember last training camp, right, when he laid Dalton Schultz out here on his ass after the scrum was already over with? And we were like, what got into Derek Stingley? We didn't know he had that in him.
Yeah.
These guys got a chip on their shoulder. And, oh, by the way, I ain't forget. They added another dude, that's a little squirrely and that definitely has a chip on his shoulder. C.J. Gardner-Johnson out there talking about how the Super Bowl champions I just played for didn't know how to program a dog or didn't want me out there because I was too much of a dog. And now that guy is here for this training camp. The Texans secondary with the chip on his shoulder, I cannot wait to watch them work.
That is a whole pound of dogs right there. That is all dogs.
And I ain't mentioned Jalen Petrie. He's going to come up at some point.
That is all dogs,
yes,
man.
Yes, sir.
I am going to go back to the offensive side of the football. I'm pumped for year three of C.J. Stroud. I am pumped for C.J. Stroud. That the organization acted with the level of urgency that they did to the season that he had last year,
yes,
which I think a lot of the regression statistically was not CJ's fault. I'll go to the grave saying that about his second year. That to watch him in season three, to get to operate with what we're hoping is a much more competent caller of plays, designer of plays, blocking schemes, better coached offensive line.
Yes.
They went and they ended last season with Nico Collins as really their only dangerous weapon in the passing game. So they went and got Christian Kirk. They went and drafted a couple of guys who have been largely applauded, I think, for where they got them in the draft and the players they are. And I'll add Jaden Higgins to the things I'm getting amped up about after watching him in minicamp. The urgency that they acted with on the offense I absolutely love. And I'm super excited to see how this plays out specifically for C.J. Stroud. Hand in his face. Slinging dimes. That's C.J. Stroud, man.
I mentioned chip on the shoulder, something to prove.
Yeah.
Like, I think C.J. Stroud is proven enough, and we all understand C.J. Stroud to be an elite quarterback. I think we all still feel that way. Nothing happened last year that takes us down from that.
Yeah.
But if he's got a chip on his shoulder, you could definitely see why.
Yes.
And have something to prove. You could definitely see why. Man, how about Jalen Petrie? And look, this is not a shot. This is me genuinely loving Jalen Petrie Stafford's own. Jalen Petrie making up for getting burned on a pass play with either a batted ball at the line of scrimmage or a tackle for loss, and then Kamari Lassiter coming up to him already slapping his own helmet, but then slapping Jalen Petrie's helmet because he just made a game-changing play after, by the way, probably giving up a pass play that's also going to have us mad.
Yeah.
But at the same time, coming up when you really need him.
Oh, yeah.
A tackle for loss behind the line of scrimmage, doing the Jalen Petrie things. And Jalen Petrie, by the way, was hurt by the end of the season.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to see that.
Can't wait to see it. I can name 50 more names, but it all gets started out here today. Brandon Scott. B. Scott, I appreciate you these three days,
man,
brother.
It was fun.
Thank you. Yeah, we had a good time. All right, about to hand it off to Texans Radio here at 8 a.m. In the Loop. We'll be out here 10 to 2. Before we get out today, man, I'm fired up for camp, dude.
Let's go.
Fired up.